iRock, Danmarks eneste rockradio. Fang os på FM, DAB, RadioPlay.dk og nu også som podcast. Velkommen til MyRock Podcast.
Det er igen blevet onsdag og selvfølgelig tid til en ny omgang af MyRock Podcast. Mit navn er Emil Schelde. Velkommen indenfor. Vi fortsætter vores Copenhagen Reloaded-serie, hvor du i dag blandt andet kan høre et interview med det band, der har spillet på Copenhagen flest gange. Det er amerikanske Trivium. Min kollega Sten tog fat i guitaristen Corey kort efter de kom af scenen til en snak om Metallica, om deres forhold til Copenhagen og ja, vejret. Selvfølgelig kan du også høre mere om, hvad der foregår i Trivium-lejren lige nu. I anden halvdel af dagens podcast kan du møde et band, der ikke har spillet koncert i næsten 20 år, og som var på Copenhagen og endda i Danmark for allerførste gang. Det er nemlig power metal bandet Demons and Wizards, som blev skabt som et sideprojekt af de to ikoner Hanse Kürsch og John Schaefer fra henholdsvis Blind Guardian og Iced Earth. Jeg fik en snak med John Schaefer om, hvorfor de har holdt pause så længe, om at lægge gitaren til side og bare vandre rundt i ørkenen uden kontakt til andre mennesker, og om at have headbanget så meget, at man har fået en nakkeskade opkaldt efter sig. Så lad os springe ud i det. Her får du nummeret Beyond Oblivion fra Trivium.
We're here backstage at the Copenhagen Festival. I'm with Corey of Trivium. How are you doing?
Doing good.
Yeah, because you just went off the stage, fresh off the stage at Copenhagen. You've been here quite a few times. How was it this time?
It was awesome. Playing so early in the day, it's kind of rough from just having to get up and your routine, you know, getting ready for a show. You kind of have to like push everything earlier, but. The crowd was amazing, you know, so it's definitely from, compared to the other times we played here over the years, this was the best crowd we've ever played to at this festival, so we were really happy with how everything went. So it was really, really fun. This has always been a really cool festival to be at, and every year we've come, it gets bigger, and, you know, especially like backstage, like the artist area has been changed from the last time before. We were in that building over there, which got kind of hot. So this setup is, they definitely keep trying to improve upon it every year. So it's been really cool to, you know, to be invited back.
If you were to compare this festival to some of the other festivals in Europe, Hellfest, Download, Donington, whatever, how do you feel here in Copenhagen?
Really good. You know, we've always loved being in Denmark, just like the whole Scandinavian area is always just some of our favorite countries and favorite cities to be in, just because they're just such cool places to just kind of go walk around. And yesterday we had a day off here, so we were in the city. So we went out to War Pigs.
Sure.
And got a...
Everybody goes there.
Yeah, I got this sweet hat. but yeah, like a buddy of ours and our crew, our lighting guy, he knows, I guess he's friends with some people that work there, and he set up a whole thing for us to come down. And we've been in Copenhagen multiple times over the years, and that was our first time ever hitting that spot. And luckily we were staying in town, that it wasn't that far to get there. So it was cool. We just went there, ate a bunch of barbecue, had a bunch of their beers and stuff, and had a really good, really good evening just hanging out in, downtown at the bar. And it was cool. Great weather, you know, especially after being in Europe for 2 weeks, and like a lot of the other festivals were just super hot, and you just felt like you're sweating all day long and then play the show. So it's been nice to get over here where the weather's a bit cooler. And
it's average.
yeah, it's definitely a bit more relaxing without the crazy heat. So we've been having a good time just kind of like hanging outside and enjoying the good weather.
Well, and you're used to having like semi-shitty weather. You're from the East Coast of the United States in Maine, right?
Well, we flew over from Florida, and at this time, like right when we left, it was getting really, really hot. Really humid, so we were like, oh, really looking forward to getting back over to Europe, where usually in the summertime it's a little bit cooler, but especially like the first week we were in Germany, and of course we had to bring the weather, and it was hot as hell, mm-hmm. You know, in Germany, and then most of the shows have been hot, so and plus the club shows, like headlining shows, are just like sweltering hot, so. We've been just stuck in the heat the whole time we've been here, so this is beautiful.
But actually, the weather in Denmark actually starts to look a lot like Florida, because the last 2 weeks there have been frequent thunderstorms every day. So
yeah,
we lucked out
because a lot of the festivals, there's been moments during the day where you can see the storm clouds coming in, and then it just you know, especially at Download in the UK, like it just rained like on and off all day, and it was just muddy all over the place. So luckily today we finished our set, and like right when we walked off stage, there was a little bit of rain, but it was just very small, and then it got like sunny and breezy out. So we kind of dodged a bullet with getting like, you know, like the storm dumped on everything and kind of making it all like muddy backstage and everything like that. So we kind of lucked out, because right when we got off stage, as I said, it was like, we're like, it might get messy, but it just kind of did it for a minute, and then it went away. So it was good.
Excellent. 2019 marks the 20th anniversary of Trivium. You've only been in the band since 2003. I read somewhere that when you came in the band, you added the element of death metal to Trivium. You're not agreeing. I can see that on you.
I wouldn't necessarily say that, because both Matt, you know, Matt and I at that time, we were both into it, and then Paula's also into it. I think it was like when I first joined, it was like what we started writing. It was just kind of like a natural continuation from the Ember to Inferno record, but with that being a three-piece album, and then I came in the band and it was two guitars instead of one. That's where we started to like, hey, now there's two guitar players, we can kind of do a little bit of more layering and melodies and stuff like that. So that's kind of like from Ember to Ascendancy, there's definitely the element of twin guitar stuff really kind of was where that kind of happened, you know, with the guitar melodies, and then Matt, you know, playing something, and I might play something else. So we're able to get a little more creative and kind of bring out our inner like Iron Maiden influence, where we can kind of do all the, like the fun dual guitar kind of harmonizing stuff, or like adding different layers to the sound to make it a little more interesting. Instead of just playing like a straight riff all the time, we can kind of do some cool stuff. So that was kind of like, you know, when I came in, we kind of brought that element to it, which has been obviously through the years kind of like something that's always stuck in our sound. But we've, you know, tried to do some, you know, each record kind of like try to add in some other thing that kind of makes it a little different, or make that record have a, you know, different vibe from the previous one. So that's just kind of been our MO from then till now. So
one of the things I have about Trivium is that it's really hard for me to put you in a box and say, well, Trivium is this, because you're all over the place. It's so many different styles and so many different influences. What is Trivium?
We just kind of call ourselves just a metal band. Obviously there's a lot of people that want to like subcategory your band or whatever, but I don't think we've ever really like just stuck to one style. We have so many different influences between the three of us, and also share a lot of influences that that kind of come out in the songwriting, because we all write together in a room, that everyone's kind of like individual influence and the collective influence kind of all kind of creeps in. So it just depends on where we take it overall, but you know, we definitely like to try to incorporate everything we like about metal with the melody and melodic stuff to the heavy stuff. So we just try to like, you know, try to fit it into our sound. And I think over the years we've just, you know, try to experiment some and try different ways of approaching stuff, that now I think it's our sound is kind of a little bit more solidified with being able to combine like the melodic aspect of our band and the heavy aspect. And it doesn't have to necessarily be like a melodic song and a heavy song. We can kind of like, we've got a lot of practice over the years making 8 albums, that we kind of know we can kind of make all those elements work within one song, and it fits together. So that's kind of like where we've kind of ended up with the last record, is just making sure everything that our fans love about the band and that make up our sound are present in the music. And it's basically, you know, for the next record moving forward, is going to be kind of that, kind of I guess the goal of having that, but also not making it sound like Sin of the Sentence Part 2. So it's going to be fun to kind of get off the road and kind of roll up our sleeves and kind of attack the next album.
One of the things that I noticed about the Sin and the Sentence was Heart From Your Hate. when I put that on, I was like, that can't be trivium, because that was so different from what you've done before. Was that like planned that this song was supposed to go this way?
Well, the original idea for the song, like Matt had a demo, and it was basically like the first part of the song was basically what the song is, you know, what you hear on the record. But on the original demo, like the middle section, it kind of went off on all this like blast beats and crazy stuff and all these like heavy riffs and stuff like that. And once we started hearing the demo and kind of the first part of the song, we're like, man, we could really do something big with this if we just kind of make this the focal point. And it kind of rode around that because we just heard such a strong melodic composition that going into something like really technical and like, you know, super metal and crazy just might not have been the right direction of the song, because it might have just sounded like you're going into a totally different song. So once we heard that, we're like, I think we could do some really cool, like a big melodic sing-along, like kind of anthem that we kind of like, once we had that kind of mindset, we kind of wrote to make sure that what the song needed, you know, kind of fit that kind of idea. So, but the song, like, it's been crazy how, you know, for being on the newest album, how big of a song it's become, you know, with our fan base and stuff. It's one of our, you know, our number one song on Spotify with streams and everything like that. And it gets such a big reaction when we play it live that it's really cool to see, like, how well the new material has become such fan favorites to see live. Because we play, like, almost over half the record at our headlining shows, and they get some of the biggest reactions from even, like, the old stuff. So it's really cool to kind of make a new record after all these years, and it's still, people are really into the new material instead of just being like, oh, they put out a new record, but I just want to hear the first couple records. So it was like when we first started touring for the record, we were playing like three songs, and then they're like, why aren't you playing this one? We're like, oh shit, didn't know there was such a request for it. So we just been keep adding more songs in, and it's just been so well received that it's been a good feeling that going into the next record, we're in a really good place where we feel really excited to kind of continue like what we've built on this record.
I read somewhere that Metallica plays a big part in the history of Trivium. That the band was initially formed when someone heard, I guess it was Matt playing No Leaf Clover at a high school. I don't know, whatever. And after that, I read that one of your biggest influences is Kirk Hammett. How does Metallica affect Trivium these days? If at all.
I'm not really sure if like they're, I guess what we're doing now is as big of an influence, but from the early stages, like when all like Paulo, Matt, and myself started playing our instruments and playing in bands or learning music and then learning how to like write songs and stuff. Like we all grew up, you know, when we first, like the first thing I ever learned on a guitar was how to play the intro to like Seek and Destroy. And the funny thing is, because like Matt, Paul and I all grew up in different parts of the country, but when we started our first bands, like when we were like 14, 15 years old, all three of our bands all played the same Metallica songs for cover songs. So it's like a great, you know, gateway band to get into metal, and also a great band to just learning their music is a great teaching tool, and to learn how to, like all the, you know, picking techniques and learning riffs and stuff like that. And so we all, like, you know, grew up just jamming to Metallica CDs and learning the songs, and basically was like, you know, listening to their music, and even like Megadeth, Slayer, Iron Maiden, all those like kind of classic bands that we grew up on were kind of the inspiration to like want to pick up an instrument, but also inspired us to want to actually form a band and write our own music. So that was like learning all those band songs and like learning how to, basically it was kind of like learning the 101 on how to write a metal riff, and learning the songs, you kind of, you know, learn how songs structures go, and you just kind of like learn their music to help kind of figure out how you actually make your own music. So we all, you know, we all, that's kind of like our, all three of our like MO as far as you know, what kind of helped us build the building blocks of how to be a metal band. And also, like, anytime you get a chance to play a festival or something and go see them, it's always inspiring to kind of keep working hard and growing your band and try to write the best music possible. And especially, like, for Metallica, that their last record, when we heard it, it was like, man, after all these years, they can still make a bitchin' album that can impact so many people. And we've seen, just with that new record, like, even, like, from on a live standpoint, just how bigger Metallica shows are, because they weren't playing stadiums headlining like on the last record, but now it's like, it just seems like there's this whole new wave of, like, excited Metallica fans wanting to go out and see them play. So it's really cool to see a band that's been around that long still having a very kind of a youthful, enthusiastic, you know, new album that, you know, really made an impact. So it's pretty cool. So they still are, you know, one of our favorite bands that we always, anything they put out, you know, we're always going to listen to and always want to see them play. So they're definitely still a big part of who Trivium is.
To learn from the best.
Yeah.
Basically. The Sin and the Sentence has been out for a little over a year. How are you doing on new material? What's going on in the Trivium camp right now?
Well, we're kind of like, this is our last run. So we get back at the beginning of July, and then it's just from there on out, it's just new record time. So we always during breaks and stuff when we're off tour, we're always writing riff ideas or making demos. So we have a ton of stuff written. We just gotta kind of like get off tour and just kind of focus on kind of finishing it up and getting all the details and whatnot. But really excited, you know, about what everyone's kind of brought to the table with new material and ideas. So, you know, once we get off tour, we'll dive into that. It's kind of hard to, you know, totally give too much information since it's a little ways off before anything's going to come out. But just everyone knows, you know, we're going to be writing a new record and it'll be out, you know, in the near future. And they should be pretty stoked about it.
Excellent. Corey, thanks for your time.
Awesome. Thank you.
Everything repeats. It's easier to cut us down and point our defeat. It's easy to be right when everything repeats. Dig below the surface, find your insecurities. Tell me, maybe you were right, maybe I was wrong, but I've been silent for far too long. Maybe you were right, maybe I should go, but I've been silent for far too long. What will it take to rip the heart from your hate? What will it take? What will it take to rip the heart from your hate? To rip the heart from your it. Your distance from reality won't bury or erase it. I tried to do the same, living so complacent, but the problems wouldn't go away. So I turned around to face them. Tell me, maybe you were right, maybe I was wrong, but I've been silent for far too long. Maybe you were right, maybe I should go, but I've been silent for far too long. What will it take to rip the heart from your hate? What will it take? What will it take to rip the heart from your hate?
Trivium kan i år fejre deres 20-års jubilæum. Og her er lidt trivia om Trivium. Forsanger Matt Heafy er halv japaner, og på hans venstre arm har han tatoveret en japansk mytologisk scene, der forestiller en kamp mellem en dæmon og en berømt samurai-kriger. Derudover er Heafy også en meget kendt gamer og har en velbesøgt profil med over 100.000 følgere på internetsiden Twitch, hvor han streamer live, når han spiller computerspil, men også når han skriver nye sange. Trivium har også, for at blive i spillenes verden, en sang med i spillet Saints Row 2, og for at høre den, skal man ind i spillet tune ind på den radiokanal, der hedder Crunch 106,66. Lad os komme videre i programmet, hvor du nu kan høre fra John Schaefer fra Demons & Wizards, der fortæller om hans Guitar Heroes, om at spille så meget guitar, at han var ved at blive lam, om hvordan forretningsdelen i bandet kan kvæle kreativiteten, og hvorfor Demons & Wizards nu vælger at spille live igen for første gang i næsten 20 år.
Oh, sitting here backstage with John Schaefer of Demons and Wizards. Hello, welcome. How are you feeling today?
Good, man. Good. Been, heading to Paris tonight, so we've only got about an hour and a half, and then we're off.
Okay.
So
you don't have time to go see anything?
No, unfortunately. We all of us would like to see Tool, but we're like, we got to get on an airplane and head to Paris so we can do Hellfest tomorrow.
Yeah.
So
are Tool playing at Hellfest? Do you know that? Are you going to see
them? I don't think so. Oh. No, they're not on any of the days. I think they're doing Grass Pop, but I think it's another day. I'm not sure, man.
Yeah,
but
okay.
I know we're missing them today. So.
And you were actually just playing on the Hades stage. How was that?
It was good. It was
good. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think the fans were into it, and it's the first time Demons and Wizards has ever played in Denmark. So,
yeah.
You know, I think it was a pretty warm reception for, you know, Iced Earth and Blind Guardian have only been here a few times through our careers, and Demons and Wizards never has been. So it's kind of, and neither band is huge here. So it's just interesting to see that there is a significant amount of people that seem to know the music. So that's cool.
And just to clarify, it's you, John Schaefer, guitarist from Iced Earth, and Hansi Kirsch from Blind Guardian on vocals,
exactly,
who made this band.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you started this band?
We started this in 1999, I think, officially. And we became really good friends. Our first European tour together was in 1991. And sort of by accident, we discovered that we could write songs together. And I was visiting Hansi at some point, and we went out and got drunk, and we woke up one morning and pretty hungover, and there was a guitar in the living room, and I just started playing this piece of music, that whatever came to my mind, and he started humming a melody, and we're looking at each other like, this is kind of cool. So we went to the studio, Blind Guardian studio, and we recorded this song that ended up becoming My Last Sunrise, and that's the last song on the first album.
Yeah.
So that was our first thing together, and we knew we had some chemistry and some special going on, but we didn't really know what we were going to do with it. So that might have already been in like 1997 that we wrote that song, and then later on we decided to make it into a project. And it's crazy because we first album came out in 2000, and the second album came out in 2005, and it's been 15 years or 14 years, and people don't forget. I mean, we've been asked about this in every interview. When's the next Demons? When's the next Demons? And it's like, you know, I think we're blessed because there's a lot of projects that don't get that kind of longevity, especially since we didn't even tour for the second record. So it's been, this summer is the first time Demons has played since 2000. So it's 19 years.
So obvious question. Why that long of a pause?
Mostly because of the Iced Earth and Blind Guardian schedule. And,
sure.
You know, I mean, it doesn't really, obviously I have to write the music. And since we did the last one in 2005 and we started talking about seriously doing it again in 2010. But man, there was just so much stuff going on, you know, it was constant. And when Stu came into Iced Earth, and that was 2011, we just went on two massive world tours back to back, and two albums and a live DVD and all that. And our schedules with Iced Earth and Blind Guardian were not really lining up to where the holes in our schedules weren't really open at the same time. So I started sending Hansi songs about 3 years ago.
Okay.
And it was during the songwriting for Incorruptible. And I sent him three, and then we started that world tour and the album cycle. And so I was like, you know, well, once we get through the Incorruptible album cycle, you know, I'll take a break and then we'll go all in. And so I started really writing songs in January. And we are in the studio now. I mean, I've finished everything in the States, but Hansi's working on vocals in Germany. We will be doing some vocal work in the States in September and mixing in September. And the album will be out in February next year. So it's fantastic.
It's already scheduled.
Absolutely
like
thrilled.
That.
Yeah,
cool.
We've already got everything. Everything's on the move, man.
And that's perfect.
And it's killer. So.
Is it only you two recording the album? Or?
No, we had Brent from Iced Earth played drums. He's not on the tour. Frederick from Blind Guardian's on the tour.
Yeah.
We always work with really talented people, whoever they may be. And so I played all the guitars and bass and the lead guitar melodies. Jim Morris did a few guitar solos.
Yeah.
Jake from Iced Earth did a couple guitar solos. We have different backing singers that are guys that Hansi's worked with over here. So, I mean, there's a lot of people that are involved. We're working with 5 different engineers on the project because we're working in different studios and stuff. So it's, you know, I know what I'm doing in a production. I've been doing this a long time, and I'm very confident. And we always are surrounded by whichever era of Demons and Wizards you look at. The people that we work with are very talented guys.
Yeah.
You know? So as long as you have the vision and you're driving it forward and, you know, give the guys good direction, you're going to get great takes and great performances. Yeah. Same thing with the live band. We have Jake from Iced Earth. We have Frederick and Marcus from Blind Guardian and Hansi. And Joost from Joost Vandenbroek. I'm drawing a blank. He has a studio. He's a producer. Yeah. In the Netherlands, and I think his band was called Star One.
Okay.
And there was another one, and I can't think of the name right now, but he's a guy that Hansi had worked with before on Arion, and we met late last year, like in November, and he's on keyboards, and he has engineered some of the vocal sessions. So, yeah.
And obviously, when you have Iced Earth and Blind Guardian together, you have people from both America and Germany. So how did you get together and rehearse for this tour?
We rehearsed at the Twilight Hall in Germany at Hansi's place, at the Blind Guardian headquarters, because this is a European tour.
Yeah.
We would have done it at my place if we were starting in America. But since we launched over here, then it made sense for Jake and I to come here and to rehearse here. We are touring North America. We're headlining Wacken on Friday, August 2nd, and then we will take off, you know, and go home. I will have been in Europe for 3 months, so I'm going to be home for about 10 days, and then we start the U.S. tour in Los Angeles. So
you only have 10 days off?
Yeah, between the two tours. Yeah.
How is that life for you?
I mean, you know, it's brutal, but this isn't that bad. The only thing that makes this super intense is that we've had the re-release of the back catalog. We've been writing and recording. I mean, my writing is basically done. I mean, I'm working on some lyrics, but that's easy compared to the other stuff. But in the holes of the schedule, Hansi and I have stayed very busy. We've done a couple video shoots. So it's only 15 shows through the summer, which is a challenge because we're talking about the ultimate end game goal here is Wacken. So we're a band that hasn't played together very often, and we're trying to get it machine tight by the time we get to Wacken, and we only have 14 shows to do that in, and they're spread out quite a bit. So we have our challenges set up for us, but the schedule has stayed pretty intense, but it's not like going out and doing 8 months of world touring, which is very intense. And you know, if you do 150, 170 shows in a year, that's heavy duty. So this is, in terms of that, the amount of playing is not too heavy, but the workload that Hansi and I have and have had. I mean, for me, it started in January this year. It's been nonstop. Once I get to November, I'm going to be able to take a break. So,
okay.
Yeah, so.
What do you usually do when you take a break? Do you put your guitar aside and do something completely different?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, the last break I took, I hiked 188 miles out in the desert mountains in Arizona.
Wow.
And was just, I spent a week with my band, with Iced Earth. We all, just the five of us, went out into the mountains and hiked together and had a great time because we were going on hiatus. So we said goodbye, and then I stayed out there for 3 weeks by myself, and it was just the best thing I ever could have done for myself to get completely recharged and ready for the Demons and Wizards mission. So I'll be doing this a very similar thing in late October, November.
You're gonna go hiking again, or?
Yeah, I am, because the mountains are really good for me in solitude, just to be alone. I love that. I love to be out in nature and to just. I get power from it, you know, when I'm completely exhausted, and because this is, you know, it can be a very draining lifestyle, and there's something about just being out in nature that gives me a lot of power. So I love
get that. And obviously on a festival, when you're playing, you have thousands of people around you, so you need some silence and solitude.
Totally, yeah. So. And we don't get very much of it in this business, so
no,
just to disconnect, you know, whenever possible and do that is a good thing. But I like to scuba dive. I like to do a lot of outdoor stuff, you know, that's my thing.
Yeah. And you've been on the power metal scene, or in the power metal scene, since I think 84 or something.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think the the scene has evolved from back then to today?
Well, we didn't start doing it professionally until the first album, which was 1990. So we were involved heavily in the heavy metal scene in the Tampa Bay area back in the day. And I mean, I've seen a lot of changes, and I would say it's not really, of course, there's different trends that come and go within the heavy metal genre. But the biggest changes I've seen have taken place within the music business itself. And yeah, that's the way people consume music, the way it has affected all of our livelihoods. You know, it's different now. It becomes less about the record royalty and more about the ability to sell tickets and T-shirts, because the streaming situation is difficult financially for a lot of bands because the royalty is very small. So you have to go out there and yeah, get on the road more, which means being away from your families more and all yeah, that stuff. So everything becomes a little more challenging, and that's probably the biggest thing that I can say the difference is, certainly from from 1990. Iced Earth has been, we've been successful in every incarnation of the band and every album cycle. But if you go back to those early years, the physical products were selling. I mean, we were selling a lot of vinyl back then,
yeah,
and CDs.
Yeah.
And we sell, actually, vinyl in the last few years has really become a big seller again. But, you know, still, in general, physical sales are down significantly because of Spotify and iTunes and, you know, Apple Music or whatever, all of those services. Yeah. I think it's cyclical and things are, it's not like things are terrible or whatever, but no, it's different. It's a different business, and it's different kind of challenges.
Definitely, yeah, especially for established bands already. I mean,
yeah,
for new bands, it's good to have streaming services so you can bring your music out there, but it's like a two-edged sword.
It is, absolutely.
So you don't make a lot of money on it, and then you have to go tour constantly.
Yeah.
And how does that affect your songwriting process? If you don't really get time to think and reflect and write.
I don't write on the road. It's a very, very different headspace for me. Plus, I'm dealing with business constantly, you know, the business of touring and preparing for a tour and every part of it. So for me to really get into songwriting mode, I need to be left alone.
Yeah.
That's my point. Even if I'm dealing with business, which I do, but like taking that trip out west was a big plus, because I was disconnected. I didn't talk to anybody. You know, I talked to Hansi twice because we were getting ready to launch the Demons and Wizards thing. But it was, you know, from management, nobody from the label, none of the band guys. I was out on my own, didn't even look at email, didn't care. And that's what I needed to do. But when it comes to actually being in the studio and songwriting, the main thing I need to do is be left alone from a lot of the business stuff. There is some things to take care of, but it's really just to focus on the songs, because the touring situation tends to be very distracting. You know, there's a lot of commotion all the time. There's things going on. Energy's being pulled a different way. And it's a completely different world. Touring and writing, or being in the studio and touring, are night and day.
Yeah, of course it is. And yeah, I guess touring for you is different these days than back in the days.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a great thing. Go out, party all the time, being a rock star, which you still are.
Yeah.
But how is the touring life now? Is it been scaled down a bit?
I mean, it hasn't really, but it's going to. You know, Iced Earth still did, like 100 shows on Incorruptible. So it's a pretty good amount. It's not like Plagues of Babylon and Dystopia. On those two albums, we did about 350 shows worldwide.
Wow.
In a 3-year period, and recorded two albums and a live album. So that was a really intense 3-year cycle. I would say, going forward, you know, things are going to calm down a little bit, mm-hmm, because it's just that time. You know, I don't want to be a slave to the hamster wheel. I don't want to beat my body up to the point, you know, where so many of my colleagues in this business have, you get sucked into the drugs and the booze because it helps you get through it, but it doesn't really help. It's a very temporary fix, and then you fuck your whole life up. Eventually it gets you. And so that's not not an option for me. And I think besides that, my biggest satisfaction and pleasure from all of this is writing songs and recording records. And I have so many productions and so many cool people that I want to work with and do projects with that I can see heading into more of a direction, especially like with Demons and Wizards. It's going to be a special event kind of a band. We're not going to go on tour and do 100 shows in a year or whatever. No. That's not going to happen. So we're doing this tour. We're doing North America. We may do some more next year. We're kind of like, we don't even know yet, but the new album is coming. And but it's going to be limited, you know. And Iced Earth is probably going to head in a similar direction, but we will do more because it's a little bit more of a machine, obviously. I mean, we've been steadily putting out records for about 30 years, so
yeah,
it's a different thing. But.
And you have your 20th anniversary for the debut album next year?
30th.
30th?
Yeah.
I can't count. No, it is 30. Oh
yeah, it's
my
a 30.
God.
Yeah.
Are you gonna? Obviously, you're gonna release a new album as well. What about the touring then? You don't know for sure yet, and you have Iced Earth also.
I don't know exactly what we're gonna do yet because there's so many things happening with Demons and Wizards.
Yeah.
So. And so many possibilities, and we're Hansi and I are just like, well, let's just get through this part, let's get the album finished, get this touring done, and then we'll sit back and assess the situation. There will be some special Iced Earth releases. The next thing is the 20th anniversary of Alive in Athens, and that's this year, so
yeah.
That is going to come out. It'll be out on vinyl for the first time. It was only on picture disc before. It'll be remastered. Going to be a nice package, a celebration of that era. And then the new Demons is in February 2020, and then that's also the year, the 30th anniversary of the first album, and I've got some ideas cooking about that, about yeah. what I want to do. But I don't want to say yet because we're really walking through the steps now with the record company and talking about it.
Fair enough. So, is there going to be a live recording of this tour?
Yes. Yeah, we're recording and filming Wacken. That's our intention is to have that as a release probably 2021, I would say.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
And I know this is a completely different question, but I know you're considered one of the greatest guitarists in power metal.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
No.
Well, I do, because of you. And who are one of your greatest guitar heroes? I just want to know this.
You know, the funny thing about that is I don't really have guitar heroes. My heroes are bass players.
The bass players?
Yeah.
Which ones?
Steve Harris, Geezer Butler, Roger Waters. I mean, it's funny, but that's because I think it's because of the songs. You know, I've never been a big guitar geek. It's a tool. I use it to write songs with. You know, I have a very specific rhythm guitar style, but I've never been obsessed with the guitar. I really look at it as that's my tool. That's my hammer to drive the nail in, you know, and it gets very little attention, unfortunately, because I spend so much time pushing the machine forward and doing all this business work and everything. But there's guitarists I love, but I never wanted to like really play like them. I mean, Randy Rhoads was probably one of my all-time favorites. Tony Iommi for sure, but I never learned any of their songs. I was never interested in doing cover tunes when I was a kid. No interest. Okay, I played the Iron Man riff, you know, yeah. The one.
I mean, who didn't?
But I mean, I never was interested in playing cover tunes. As soon as I got a guitar and learned the power chords, I started making up my own parts. And that was the only thing I was ever interested in. Because I went right from being an artist, drawing and painting into songwriting. I've always been an artist.
Okay.
And I was into that and then immediately went into, I saw Kiss in 1979 and I was like, okay, this is it. That's what I gotta do. And it took me about 3 years to convince my dad to give me a guitar, and he did. And then it all started. And then it was like everything went completely into the music, and I haven't drawn anything in years. Except for the logos of the bands, you know, but
yeah.
I sketch out, you know, the stage for Demons and Wizards for the big Wacken show. I've drawn that out and sent it to the guys. And I mean, I still have that ability, but it all went to music and it all went to songcraft. I mean, I was immediately writing songs, writing lyrics, writing music, and putting arrangements together, and that's been my entire motivation. I don't really care about guitar heroes at all. I mean, I don't even... There's like David Gilmour would be my favorite lead guitarist ever. And because he can say so much with three notes and make you want to cry. You know what I mean? It's amazing. Those kind of guys, I'm like, wow, but I could never play that way.
How about guitars? Do you swear to one brand?
Yeah, I'm a Gibson guy.
You're a Gibson guy. Yeah. Why Gibson?
Yeah, why?
Yeah, why Gibson?
It's just because of my playing style. I mean, I have Strats, I have Tellys in my collection in the studio, and I use them for specific parts. But the basic chunky heavy Eisterth stuff, it's all Les Pauls, sometimes an Explorer in there, SG or whatever, but it's something about the scale length. It definitely has a lot to do with the set neck design. Yeah. The punch of a Les Paul for a rhythm guy like me, it's just there isn't anything else that does it. Otherwise, I would play guitars that are lighter and wouldn't destroy my neck, because I've had two neck surgeries.
Oh, really?
The first one, I blew out my disc in the first one in 1996 on stage in Berlin, and I had the fusion in 2000, and then I had the second fusion in 2014. Yeah, it's the same thing that Tom from Slayers had, and Jason Newsted, and Dave Mustaine. I mean, I'm actually in the Urban Dictionary. It's Schaefer neck for headbangers shit. It's a real thing, and as all of us get older, we're all finding out that it's a deal. So you gotta be careful. But I just won't compromise on my tone. You know, just for the sake of like.
Your own health.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an option because I got to be able to feel the metal or fuck it. I'm not going to do it.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So, do you feel the strains still? Do you have to do exercises every day
to
be able to perform?
No, I don't have to do exercises every day, but I have to be careful when I haven't been headbanging in years because I can't do it. It's too dangerous. You know, it got so bad on the Plagues of Babylon World Tour that I had to go to a doctor, and I got about 16 or 18 injections every day in my neck and my arm because I was losing control of my arm. And I was reading Tony Iommi's book, and he wrote about this doctor in Dusseldorf. So I went 5 days in a row, had all these injections, and it helped me get through. But they did the films, and they said, one wrong move and you can be paralyzed. You have to be very careful for the rest of the tour, which is why we ended up canceling festivals for the 2014 season, because I was trying to hold out until September, but I couldn't. So we had to cancel Wacken and a bunch of other shows because I had to get the surgery done. Yeah. But it's just a matter of like being careful with the lifestyle and trying to. The travel is difficult. All the flights and everything really are worse on my neck than anything. So that's where it's about diet and exercise, definitely. But those are the crucial things, and just, you know, it's hard to rest out here. So that's.
But no signs of retiring.
No, I mean there. That's going to come someday. But and mostly, I would say it'll be more of a retirement from the road, not from making music and records and doing productions. Because, as I said, that's what I love to do. That's my always been my driving thing. Is to the vision's here, and I got it. When I make it, can make it a reality, and get to that end product. It's like that's satisfying. It's the most satisfying thing.
Right. Great to know you're gonna play guitar for the rest of your life.
I'm gonna try, man.
Yeah, man. Thank you for talking to me. And,
hey, thank you.
Have a nice show.
Her var der nummeret Heaven Denies, og dermed afslutning på denne uges My Rock Podcast. Husk at lytte med igen på næste onsdag, hvor vi endnu en gang tager med tilbage til sommer, sol og satan på Refshaløen. Mit navn er Emil Schelte. Tak fordi du lyttede med.
My Rock Podcast.